So we went to a woman psychic of dog psychic in Marina Del Rey.
Well, that's not a scam.
Hello, everyone. Hola, mis amigos. You're listening to Oh My God, Hi, Hijo de Dios, Hola. With me, George Lopez, porque sabes que, let's do the show, porque acá la tengo que go to that dry cleaner ahí, my kid Phelps, se pegó la cabeza, I gotta go get some Neosporin Paul.
You know where George is?
Oh, I'm sure he's around here somewhere.
What's his name?
George
Lopez.
George Lopez.
Oh my God.
OMG.
OMG. Hi.
Oh my God, hi. So when CBD is too mild and dispensary THC is too crazy, you got to try Diet Smoke Delta 8 THC gummies. Legal in most states. You can get them shipped to your door. Go dietsmoke.com. Use the promo code OMGHI for 20% off. That's OMGHI at dietsmoke.com for 20% off. I'm going to tell you something right now. Of all the stuff that I've tried, Diet Smoke is the best. It's like it's non-invasive. You don't feel like you're too loud or you don't feel like everybody's looking at you. Nothing about Atlanta.
That's completely too smart to fucking be from here.
Like, wait a minute. I said, where's he from? I looked at him. I was like, fucking Atlanta. I said, Atlanta? Why isn't he running Atlanta? You talk to guys back there, like friends back there, and people
yeah,
went to school with
them? Outside of one sister who's in North Carolina, everybody's still in Atlanta, and we go there. I have a kid now, so we're there quite a bit. Yeah. You know, whereas normally I'd be there once or twice a year, now I'm like four times a year. Yeah. But yeah, I still got a bunch of friends, although a bunch of them moved, like, and, you know, understandably, if you've spent time in Atlanta. But
what is that, though? Like, what is that whole thing, like the voting and the whole, like trying to make it harder for people, or some of the things that go on over there politically?
Oh,
like,
it's terrible.
So contrary to the rest of the country.
Well,
the voters' rights and.
Yeah, but that, I mean, that's happening in every kind of purple or red state, you know? And, I mean, what's going on in Texas is way worse, but yeah, it's bad in Georgia too. But, you know, they have that. You know, Atlanta is that pocket of blue, and Savannah too, or like little pockets of blue. Yeah. But it's, I mean, even growing up there, it's more so now, but even like the feeling of if you just drive 35 minutes in any direction outside of Atlanta, I mean, you're like, oh, wow. Wow. You know,
there was a baseball player, if you guys want to know who it is, I'll tell you. That was, he's Latino and African American, and in the 60s he was playing minor league baseball in the South, and his roommate was like a dude that was always like scoring chicks and drinking in the room, you know, the guys doubled up, and he said, man, I gotta get out of here, you know, and he went for a walk and got pulled over and almost got shot and killed by the police.
Is in Georgia?
Yeah. And he was like, it opened my eyes, like I was just walking.
Yeah.
And they come up on me and they're like, let me see your hands. The lights are in his face. And he's like, I'm here playing baseball. I'm over there. You know, they come over and rousted him.
It still happens. Look at, you know, the guy who was just murdered in, wasn't Atlanta, but, you know, like middle
Georgia. Ahmaud Arbery, that one?
Yeah. And Trayvon Martin, you know, went to go get some fucking candy. And
you know,
I don't have any fond, unfortunately for myself, in my naive, sheltered life, I don't have fond memories of Georgia.
Wait a minute. Motherfucker, you were in Vietnam. What do you mean, naive, sheltered?
I don't have fond memories. Right after Vietnam, they sent me to Fort Stewart, Georgia.
Mm. Mm.
And I was brought up here in L.A., and I had never experienced segregation. Back then, 1969, they still had whites only, you know, signs. Whites only.
Really?
Yeah.
69?
1969.
Wow.
They still had signs up there.
Wow. Those probably were the best places to eat.
And, well, I don't know. I couldn't go in. You know, wow. And I'm just sitting there saying, my gunner took, the first gunner that I had got hit in the back, and he was black. And I said, we couldn't walk down the streets together and go get something to eat or use restroom or stuff like that. If he were here with me, you know, he was already out of the army back. And I just, it was so bad. And that was, so I just stood on base. On base, you know, it was cool. I requested, send me back to Vietnam. I'd rather go back and fight than be here with, it's not the way I was brought up, and I was uncomfortable.
And where is Fort Stewart?
Outside of
Savannah. South Carolina. He's just trying to make it relatable.
It's about 50 miles. My memory serves me correctly. It's about 50 miles out of Savannah.
Right.
And I never made it to Savannah.
Yeah. Savannah's cool. It's interesting. It's...
It looked beautiful. The place looked beautiful.
It's a trip.
It's. I mean, listen, it's beautiful. The United States, it's beautiful. And places to go see. But, I mean, I think, you know, I'm a member of a few clubs. And, you know, those clubs were created so that a certain group of people aren't allowed to be in there.
Yeah.
Even to this day, like this girl.
You're talking about Friars Club?
Sam's Club. Different than Costco. Tough one to get in
there. Sam's Club.
Different is different.
Yeah. You're talking about the flagship lounge at American Airlines.
You can't get in. I don't know why they make the American card, Express card black. That's not going to help you. They should make a white card. In growing up like that, it's like...
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up here in the San Fernando Valley. But even amongst ourselves in our own community, there's... What did I tell somebody? That the mother wants it... The father wants it to be a boy, the mother wants it to be healthy, and the grandparents want it to be light-skinned. You know. I mean, I was dark, like darker growing up, and even darker in the summer, and fucking kids would be like, my mom doesn't want me to play with you because you're dark.
Yeah, like, I mean, I had, look, I was Jewish and blatantly Jewish. I mean, I'm bald now and have been for a while, but I mean, I had Jufro and I was, you know, I mean, that was as foreign as anything. Right. There were way more black kids, probably not so many Latinos, but probably more Latinos and black kids where I was growing up then, Jewish, right. You know, that was white Southern Baptist, you know, kind of faux civil, you know, polite, faux
who,
polite.
Who's their enemy? Who are they? I mean, if we're all worshiping somebody, who's their enemy? People that look
progressives, yeah. Liberals, you know. I think it's and you know, but for a lot of people. It was so foreign, like they're.
But enemy's probably not the right word. They're
not comfortable.
They're
and
not
they,
comfortable with people.
They, just like they would see black people or Latino people and go, oh my, you know, my property values are going to go down and they're going to bring you know crime and whatever. I think there wasn't that with me, but it was just. You know, foreign and weird and
right.
I mean, I have old bits about, you know, growing up Jewish in the South and and it's different now. I mean, it is Atlanta is vastly different. It's much more cosmopolitan and global and international. Right. But man, when I was a kid, it was weird. Yeah.
Things have changed a lot, and not.
It changed not too much longer after I left.
You know,
we got rid of Gil. Okay, now let everybody come on. Everybody's safe now. But
it's all about you.
You were holding
them down. I remember them talking about a black man and a white female.
Yeah,
I mean that's a Georgia felony right there.
Yeah,
that's what they call a Georgia felony.
My grandmother. I was in San Fernando, California, and there was a. African-American man dressed very nattily attired with a hat. And he was holding hands with a white woman. This probably had to be 68 or 69. And my grandmother looks at them and looks at me and goes,
That's the other thing. It's like the older generation. Like, man. You should know. Like, I had an uncle and an aunt that... You know, got really upset when a black family moved, and this is in Westchester, or no, it was in the Bronx or Westchester. But I'm like, of all the people, like you should know better. And it's a bummer.
Yeah, your special, I saw it. It's very good, man.
Oh, thank you.
It's very, very good. Thank you. Good. Congratulations.
Thanks. Thank you.
And What venue is that? You live in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
That's a venue in Brooklyn, right?
It is, yeah. That's where I was when I was getting shows together to get ready to go on the road, and I had to cancel my tour, unfortunately, so I like scrambled to put that set, you know, to tape it, and just did it all kind of myself. And I mean, I didn't operate the cameras, obviously, but
well done. It's well done, very well done.
Well, thanks. And I'm distributing myself, and it's going to be on my website, and that's, you know, it's a whole new thing. But yeah, that's one of the venues I would play. It's called the Bell House in Gowanus, which is a great, great venue. They do music. And,
it's a theater?
No, it's like a music or comedy club, and you know, we put the chairs down. There's some, you know, for comedy and some things will have really chairs, nice. But otherwise they move the chairs
about
out.
About how many people? Like maybe 700, 1,000?
No, I think if you took off, you crammed everybody in there, took the chairs out, it's probably, I'm going to say 556, 600, maybe not even, maybe 455.
It's shot bigger, it looks bigger.
Well, that's the magic of
it. Is the magic of television? Yeah. So when you
it's all tricks, George.
So I know I'm learning. The when you put that set together, was it from A to Z? It appears like it's really well done. Like you took the time to really put it out there, right? It's an hour, runs at almost an hour.
Yeah. It's and, well, I mean, here's how I approach the last three specials or the
I want to ask you without seeming like because I'm in the business, like seeming like I don't, but it's really to
you,
me.
Would
I
you
think,
like some tips, George?
I would.
I think all of these.
I'm not going to tell which ones, but
tips, and you'll become. I'll put them. Maybe you'll become successful.
But I mean, just the way that it was just all really good, man. And I mean,
well,
and I mean, the vaccination anti-vax thing in the beginning is brilliant.
Thanks,
it's brilliant, man.
Thanks. I mean, as you know, I mean, the one of the most important parts of putting a set together that a lot of people who don't do stand-up don't ever think about, but is sequencing. I mean, that's a really key part. And you know, the way I get all my sets together, tours, is, you know, especially when I'm starting from scratch, I start and I go around Brooklyn. There's so many clubs, and I bike to everything. It's all, I'm like centrally located. I hop my bike and go.
Yeah, cool.
And I do these shows called shooting the shit, seeing what sticks. And I go, when I just have ideas and things on, you know, note paper, and it starts at, I usually start at like Union Hall in Park Slope. It's 99 seats in a basement, crammed together, you know. And I just, I tape everything, and I'll have special guests, so I'm not doing, you know, at least people are getting real legit jokes, and then as I accrue the material and I go, oh, this works, that didn't work, and you know, I listen and I kind of edit and figure stuff out, and then I go to bigger venues, still kind of do the same thing, and then you know, do another couple months of that and just taping, you know, riffing on things, but there's the ideas are getting tighter and more well formed. And you know how it is. You have a idea, and you have to sometimes try different angles.
Sure.
And I'm like, I'm too angry when I say that. I should make it more innocent, or I should not do it through my point of view, but the kid's point of view, or whatever. However you come to figure out how to talk about that thing you want to talk about. And then, like the very end of it is, I go to bigger venues like Bell House, and. You know, it's just me, no guess. I go up, I have a real strong idea, but then it's about sequencing. Like, is this too much heavy stuff, and where is this too much silly shit?
Right.
And like, how to sprinkle in the silly shit when you get you intuit that feeling of like, okay, it's time to move on. Let's move on. Let's lighten it up, or let's get serious, or let's do something anecdotal that they can relate to, or whatever. And you know, it's a really important part. And then I'll ask the audience at the end, like. What'd you all think? Did you think it was too much? I do that at the end of the you know, the last phase, as it were.
Yeah.
And the audience came up with the titles for the last two shows. So I did. This one is called "I'm from the Future," and the one before that was called "Oh Come On," and they're both taken from lines of things that I say. But whenever I approach. And I'm always wrong, always. And I'll go like, hey, I had some ideas for the for the name of the tour, the name of the special, and I'll say them, and they're kind of like pompous or just bullshitty, bad puns. And people always, the ones I like, people are like, no, that's a bad idea. And then yeah. And then with this one and the one before it, people in the audience were like, shouted it out, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a cool idea. Like, wasn't my idea, somebody else's.
But did you say I'm from the future, like in the body of the special? You say it.
Yeah, it's the bit where I'm talking to the kids, yeah. The little that's kids, mm-hmm. About what they're going to grow up to become angry about.
Right.
And it's just a little thing. I'm my name's David. I'm from the future, and yep. I'm here to tell you. And
what. It's very good. For people that haven't purchased a special online that a comedian has put out himself. Mm-hmm. How would people go about to find your special?
Thank you, George.
Yes, sir.
Yes, it'll be on my website, which is called officialdavidcross.com, and I'm doing it that kind of model that a bunch of comics, Louis C.K. has mm-hmm. done, a number of comics, and you have total control. You guys, you go, you buy it, and you have it, and you can do whatever you want with it, I think, within reason. and yeah, it's called I'm From the Future, officialdavidcross.com.
And are you paying attention to this stuff, George? Okay.
We're recording this, so you can check it out.
You know, I did a special at Showtime, but then I was working on my show, so I couldn't edit. And then the guy from yeah. Showtime did it. And when I saw it, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't like what he did. I didn't like what he took out. And he took it out because he didn't like what, which should have been not him, should have been me.
Was it an exec or who?
Yeah. I bump against this.
Yeah.
I say, well, you know, it stays. Well, can we do this? But he just, you know, I let him.
Well, that's the other thing. And you're in a much better position to do this than I am. But, I mean, you do it yourself. You have complete
yeah.
control.
Yeah.
You know, and I shot, I mean, the shows I did were probably, I did three sets over two nights, and they were roughly about an hour and 20, 25 minutes, and I cut it down to an hour and five.
Yeah.
And there were some bits that I was like, you know what? I'm going to pull this because this can be better. And if I go out on the road, this who knows what this bit will develop right. into. And it just, it's a better process.
So that's an accumulation of three shows?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who edited it?
I mean, when I tell you, I scrambled. Yeah. I had to cancel the tour. And then it was like, look, I've got a lot of this material that, you know, who knows when I'm going to be able to go back out on tour. Mm-hmm. And I've got this project that is going to start in the spring with Bob Odenkirk and his brother Bill. And this could take a while. And, you know, by the time I go out on the road, it could be 2 years from now. Yeah. So mm-hmm. a lot of this material, I'm not going to do that
right.
in 2 years. I'm going right. to do the stuff about my dog in 2 years right. and all that. So I was like, I just scrambled to put it together and did it. And the great thing about releasing it myself, when I went to go try to sell it, and people were like, well, our slots are filled. We couldn't really air this until, you know, summer
right.
of 2022. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, fuck, that's way too far. So now I shot mm-hmm. it in November, and it's going to be out in a couple months.
Incredible.
You know, from November.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And anybody who's a fan of comedy, it's just great to have. You can just carry it around. You own it.
Yeah, you should really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not kidding. You should yeah. check into doing it. It's a really good feeling, and it lives in perpetuity on your space, and people can get it.
But in the way you started the special, it, like the way you said in sequencing, it allowed you to do things in the middle and toward the end that the audience was already with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And things that are interesting, you know, the euthanasia of a dog. Which I had a dog for 16 years, and
that's a long time.
And a long time. And I gave it to my wife before we got married, and he came from a champion bloodline, wasn't that expensive. But when we went to go take him to get his shots, the vet said, I hope you didn't pay a lot of money for this dog. This dog's like, and we're like, yo, man, that's like a kid to us now. Are you kidding me? What do you mean? Well, fuck that vet. We're like, get in the car. We're like, we're not going back to that vet. But we took care of this dog. And treated him like family. It was just before, even before my daughter was born. And he was around, he lived to be 16, and he fell into the pool one time when he was older and couldn't get out, and the neighbor heard him yelping, and we went and got him, and Anne was just inconsolable, more than I've ever seen anybody for a human being.
Yeah.
And I said, Anne, you know, you got it. You got to get a hold of yourself. You know, she's holding him in this towel and she looks up and I was like, you got to get, I mean, it's a dog. Don't say that, you know? And just, I was like, wow. I said, and I thought to myself, what's going to happen? It's going to be pretty soon because he's can't get around. He's in, his hips were in pain. And that we went to go take him to get put down. And in the car, he was like a puppy looking around, opened the window. His head is out the window. And I said, are you sure that he didn't have a, you know, and he, you know, you're just like, they gather this strength. People do it. They gather the strength. Mm-hmm. And we went in there and, man, they give him like the half shot.
I know, man.
And then he goes, you can say goodbye. And I couldn't take it. I was I was her. We changed roles. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't take it. And they're looking at me and just looking at me like, And I left, you know, and I went in the car. And
you're still having a hard time. I can see it right now.
And
it's awful. It's
we went to a woman psychic of psychic dog psychic in Marina Del Rey.
Well, that's not a scam.
She had a picture of the dog. Somebody had FedExed it to her. He's on his way. So listen. Let me say. So. We go in there, and the lady and the woman says to the person I took. I wasn't even there for me, and gave her this dog had passed away, and then she said to me, "You had a dog," and I said, "Yeah, I did," and she told me his name, and she said to me, "He wants me to tell you, you know, if you, that he understands," and I said, "Okay." And she was like, did you leave the room in a time? I said, oh, I left the room when he was being put down. And she's like, he wants me to tell you that he understands that you loved him and stuff. I don't think anybody would know that.
Well, it's an educated guess.
Yeah,
and she asked you the question. She didn't say it as a statement, like you left the room,
right.
Didn't you? She said,
shit.
Did you leave? And probably people often leave the room. So, sorry, man.
Cold reading spoilers here.
Well, thank God she died as well.
She didn't see it coming, did she?
You owe me $1,100 and for the crystals in exit 3.
my Chesapeake Bay Retriever was old. Arthritis had set in. The vet had already told me. You know, he says, you'll know. He's getting older and he's in pain. So finally it was time, you know, and I could see him just to get up, to move. And so I told the wife, I said, okay, it's time. I'm going to take him to bed.
How old was he?
He's probably about 13 then. Mm-hmm. And my wife said, my daughter and I will go with you. And I said, no, because all you're going to do is cry. You guys just stay here. I'll take him. So macho dad takes him to the vet.
Man,
the vet says, okay, you want to put him up on the table? I put him on the table. He said, you want to stay in here? I said, absolutely not. And I start crying.
Yeah.
I just started crying. I had never cried. And I cried like a baby. I walked out, and he says, okay, come back in. Back in, the dog, he looked like he was asleep, his paw in front of his head right there, peaceful, and I left. I told my wife, I don't want another dog. That's it. I got too attached. No more dogs. Years later, I'm going to retire, and I told the wife, I said, I want another dog. Now I want a companion. It's going to be different for me. You know, I want another dog. Got the dog, took it back to the vet. I said, hey, doc, I don't know. He used to take care of another dog for me. He said, here's a new dog. He goes, oh, I remember you. You're the very emotional man.
He says, I'll never forget you. I mean, you should be. I hope you're very emotional.
Yeah.
What kind of weirdo's just dropping off a, you know, lifelong pet going, all right, here you go. Kill this thing, and you just text me when it's done, and I'll take, you know.
I'll come and get his ashes.
Yeah, toss it out back.
After it's not good for me.
That there's stuff that I cut from that, mm-hmm. from that bit about the it's really about, you know, the when it happens and then the next couple minutes, because I had people come to the house and do it, and
which I wasn't aware they did, though.
Yeah, that's a that's a thing. I didn't know about it until, but I know, like, as I said, you know, my sister's done mm-hmm, it and mm-hmm. I have friends who've done it, and you know, it's as you described, they give them the sedative, and then they, you know, and I was in such an emotional state, as was everybody. And the vet did that classic thing with the, you know, they had the stethoscope and then took it off, and she, you know, she's like, okay, she's going or whatever, and I'm like going, she goes, her heart has stopped. And I go, so is she dead? You know, like, so I know the answer to that, but I still was like, so that's it? You know,
like, yeah. It's big. I think they carry you through your life. If you're a kid and you end up with a dog and the dog lives, he's carrying you through your in your early teens.
I did not cry, and I understood when my mom passed. When they came in, they said, hey, give her a shot. She made, well, you know, she won't be able to talk. She won't be able to do anything. I said, I don't care. It's about her. They gave her the shot. She went to sleep. And I didn't even cry then. My dog, you know, dog gives you... You know, love. That's all unconditional love.
It's pretty amazing, you know, and what you just described as well, you know, like, even with, there's more of a thing than with people sometimes, you know?
How was your daughter during that? Your daughter's very young. She's young, huh?
Yeah. My wife and I were not expecting nor prepared for how hard she took it. We didn't think she would take it that hard, and she was upset for days. And when that happened, she was 4.5.
Yeah,
you know? And we just didn't expect. And we had her do a sleepover somewhere, and we had them come in.
Wow.
Day was like done in the afternoon, and also that the idea, you know, it's going to happen, and I'm taking my dog for its last walk and its last meal, and all because this we didn't have him come until 3 o'clock. So the whole day, you're looking and feeling weird. It's just weird. And,
man,
and then they come in. It's very, you know, it's calming. It's good for the dog. It's better than, you know, if we went to the vet, she knows.
They know that.
And so this is. And yeah, so then when my daughter came back the next morning, we'd go, hey, we have a, and we were planning, we have a house upstate. And the whole idea was like, come, put her in the car, and we're going for the weekend. And, you know, just get away from where all this stuff happened. And we said, hey, so, and she knew also we were preparing her for months and months. And she saw what condition Ollie was in, our dog. And we said, you know, Ollie, you know, got sick last night and passed away, and she fucking lost it. And we were not expecting that. It was the whole write up and just the, you know.
Yeah.
And she would, you know, seem fine. And then the next day she'd be like, I miss Ollie. It was tough. It was tough.
And what kind of dog was it?
I have no idea. Oh. I don't know. She was
a four-legged one.
Yeah. I never saw her. I paid her. You know. No, she was a rescue dog, and we had the what do you call that? The DNA swab thing done, and she was, there was nothing that was 50% or over, but the most prominent mix was Akita and Rottweiler. But she was very furry, kind of soft ears, very, very. And about medium size, like 55 pounds.
Have you got another dog?
No, and I want to.
And you know, when you have a child, it's a big.
Well, I want to for. You know what? That's disingenuous. I was going to say I want to do it for our daughter, but it's actually I want to use my daughter as an excuse to get another dog my wife would like a cat, and you know we live in New York, and that thing when the dog's. Shits, and it's 4 a.m. You're like, fucking goddamn it! And then it's snowing. I gotta put all that shit on. Yeah. Like, god damn it! Come on, go poo.
Yeah, it's true.
You know?
It's true.
And so, what we had said was, we'll wait till after the winter, and when it's smart. Like spring, we'll get, because it'll be a puppy, you know, and
cats.
Fuck cats.
Hey, when they did the DNA test. Hey,
fuck cats.
We had a cat. You wouldn't see that motherfucker for months.
Yeah.
To the house somewhere. I mean, it's like, where the fuck is this cat? I mean, nowhere, no hair.
Yeah.
Didn't use a litter box. Fucking water still. They're like, what the fuck is it? It was on the house one day. I mean,
when
my
they
daughter.
Did the DNA on your dog, they find out that he had any other family dogs
was
out there. There were felons, you know, that were wanted for any crime.
Run through the system.
Well, Rottweiler, probably. Yeah.
Well, you know, I rescued dogs, and I was not, you know, I didn't know my father, nor my mother's awful upbringing, no association to anything. You didn't cling to anyone, and we had dogs and things like that. I never really got close to them. And then I did this project, and this girl says, "I said, what do you do?" She goes, "I rescue dogs. I'm part of this." She's Big Love Rescue. She was in here. And she says, "You ever watch those videos of those dogs being rescued or being surrendered or being abandoned?" And I said, "No."
Oh, God.
I wish I hadn't. I wake up in the middle of the night and start absolutely watching not. One where the people move away and they leave the dog and it won't let anybody come near them. And then they win them over. And it just turned me into a rescued dog person, which I didn't expect to be. I probably rescued maybe 25 dogs in the last 7
years.
Well,
that's great.
We have one now that found us and started hanging around out. Nobody could get near him. I thought he
was coming to your home.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he looked like he was rabid. He was skinny. He was dirty. He was mangy. Nobody could get anywhere near him. My neighbor and myself called animal control because we didn't know where this dog was coming from. Animal control came by and they left a little leash. Said, "Hey, you can get close enough to put a leash on him." He said, "We'll come back and pick him up. We can't get close enough to him." This went on for about a week, and I just started. I told my wife, I said, "I can't let this dog out here. Hey, you know, put some water and food out here for him." So he started coming around, and finally got close enough to him, and he'd come and eat on the floor in front of me, and then I got him to eat out of my hand. Mm-hmm. And I took off for the day. I had to go get my car serviced. I called the wife up. I said, "Okay, she's not a real animal lover. She's never been a dog lover." And I said, "Okay, you can call the death squad over." She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, yeah, you know, animal control is going to come down. I can get the leash on them. They're just going to take them and kill them. They're going to euthanize them." And I said, "That's what you want. So just letting you know, it'll happen today." And when I got home, about a half hour later, there was a stainless steel water bowl, stainless steel dish, a bed.
You played the long game.
And that dog.
I knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was better for the dog or better for my family.
Right.
And now that is coming up next month. It'll be a year that we've had the dog.
Nice.
And he's just a great dog. We're having a little problem. He started having, he had a seizure. So I took him down to the vet. Matter of fact, I was there with the vet for something else. And he had a seizure while he was there. I said, "Hey, seizure time." You know, and he's right there. They saw him. They gave him some medication.
How old is he?
They think it'll be 6 now.
Okay.
When we got him, he was 5. Mm-hmm. And he's a terrier mix, just a little shit. You know, and he's, so they gave him the medication. And that made him really lethargic all the time. You know, it just drained him. And a neighbor of ours has a very similar dog. And he said, "My dog was having seizures." And they gave me some medication, made him really dopey. And so we just stopped giving it to him. And now if he still has seizures every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And all we did, which is the first time he had had one around me, I just picked him up and held him, held him tight. So he still has seizures every once in a while. Some are stronger than others, but I don't know what to do with it, you know. And
I think you made the right choice in not giving him, you know, not sedating him or giving him that stuff.
We're happy. He's happy. It's all good.
You know, and I think, do they know they're rescued? I believe that they.
Oh.
They know they've received a better life.
I think so, for sure. Yeah.
In the girl, Natalie, that would help me, I had a dog. I said, "Hey, go find a," you know, I always try to keep a few in there. There was a spot in the roster open. And I said, "Hey, Nat, go over there and see if you can find a little dog and see if there's one, you know." And she goes over there and she calls me. She goes, there's not any here. And then I was leaving and they said, "There's one in the back that's in the medical thing," but just because it was older. And it would, I called it the Chupis because it looked like the Chupacabra. It was all Chihuahua that was all kind of beat up and sideways. And I took him and he might live maybe a year. Mm-hmm. And just was so sweet, but looked like he had a heart. You know, I had an uncle that was a hype, you know, they call a drug addict guy. He'd come around and he looks so different than everybody else in the family. Skinny, gaunt, a different color skin. You're like, shit, that is my uncle. And that dog learned to, I mean, it could walk very slow, but it could still walk. And he would eat, he would drink water, put a sweater on him. He was cool, you know. And the minute that he had trouble standing up, he got mad at himself. Like, I can't stand her. Like, and she would say, come and watch this. And he would try to get up and he couldn't do it. And you could see himself almost frustrated with himself not being able to stand up. And I'd never seen that in a dog before. And, you know, having those dogs, I think, you know, from growing up the way I was, a little bit detached. But then giving and seeing them looking helpless and then the freedom walk to the car, and then she would get them something to eat, like a hamburger or something. And they look in an hour, Dave, you know that, completely happy, smiling. A dog smiles just happy. Then when you walk by them and you look at them like they're in the cage, and people walk by and they're trying to engage with people. Yeah. And
my wife, I know it hurts on the inside still, because that dog, she takes it. She tells me, I feed that dog, I take that dog out to shit, I do everything. You know, it's cold outside, raining. She goes out there, she with the dog, but yet you come around.
Oh yeah.
And the dog starts crying. He sees me walk. He starts crying at the door. Can't wait to get there. He's all over me. In the morning, open my bedroom door, and you can hear him like a racehorse racing down the hallway, come and jump up on the bed. And then I'll jump up the bed, and right there next to me, he says, see, I do everything for him, yet you're the one that he always goes to.
It was probably that initial week that, maybe. You are the savior. You're the one who, you know.
What's different about living in New York and Brooklyn than living in Atlanta or living in Los Angeles? You know, I mean, you ride your bike everywhere, which is cool.
Right, you ride your bike. That's actually a big deal. I mean,
ride your bike somewhere. Yeah,
yeah. That's. I mean, I just prefer, and I lived in LA for 9.5 years, and obviously I have to come back here when I've got work here. But my personality type. I just prefer denser. You know, I like being able to walk a lot and seeing a lot of different stuff. I don't like the idea of, I got to go pick up some milk and having to get in the car and do that. And I like the kind of the neighborhood vibe in New York. And I like, there's a different, like Atlanta is a very, people are friendly. And that's just kind of a Southern thing. People just, there's more engagement, you know. A lot of it is kind of chit-chatty stuff, but there's just more. And every time I go home, I'm like, oh, this is a nice way to be, you know. and not that people are mean or aloof in L.A. It just doesn't happen. I think the difference with L.A. Is for so many people... And this is also not good if you're a comedian as well. But for so many people's experience, you're in your house, which is, you know, you got some space, or your apartment, where you don't see a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. And then you get in a car, which is, you know, you get in this box and you drive to this other kind of bigger box. Mm-hmm. And then you get in it and then you work and then you get back in that other little box. And then you go back to another box. And in New York... I mean, just, you know, I walk my daughter to school. It's 3.5 blocks down the street. And I, you know, I have like 5 different locals I go to where I know all the bartenders and I know the people there. And you just know your, you know, I know the butchers and you just know people.
Awesome.
And you experience more in a, you know, day-to-day basis, I think. More interaction with other people and seeing different things and, you know, riding the subway, which is one of my favorite things. I love the subway and riding my bike. And so that difference, I guess, is the biggest.
If somebody wasn't a person, you know, like me, like I've lived out here my whole life, and if I spent some time over there, you think, does someone adapt to that lifestyle? Like to be able to walk to a store?
Sure.
To be able to walk to something and it kind of opens you up where you didn't think, like I wouldn't think that I would enjoy that, but if I was there, I'm sure I would.
Well, this, it's not like walking into the store here. It's literally you're going, but you also are seeing so many things in, it's not like you're walking through a residential street.
But like having your places that you go have a drink, those guys know you, you go in and you work a little bit, they're cool. Like, hey, what's up? You're in there, pack up your stuff, you go, you can walk back home,
you walk home.
And be cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And also, I like four seasons too. I like four distinct seasons. I like winter. I like, you know, I don't like a ton of winter, but I like 3 months of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I like spring and I like summer and I like fall.
Yeah.
And I, you know, again, I don't like 6 months of summer, but, you know, it's that feeling, especially when it's like shitty hot out, you're in the heat wave, you're like, okay, I'm ready for fall.
Yep.
And fall's great.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's cooling down and just it's a different energy and now I got a sweater and and there and then, you know, you get into winter and you're like, yeah, it's snowing. All right, yay. And then right at the end of winter, I felt this when I was living in Boston too, like really right about the time you're like, all right, I'm fucking over the winter, and then it warms up again.
Right.
And then you get spring, and spring's really optimistic, and it's cool, and people are, you're shedding your clothes, and you're like, and then summer! Oh, shit! And all the concerts out at the, you know, the and we've got beautiful parks. I'm you know, maybe 15-minute walk from, even less, from Prospect Park, which has a zoo, which, you know, I take my kid there, and it has, and the next to the botanical gardens, and, I mean, it's
it's amazing that it's set up like that to, yeah, for people, I mean, to live it, and not here. Like over here on the 5, I mean, growing up here, the 5 freeway was 2 lanes on one side and 2 lanes on the other. No diamond lane, no, we're traveling more than 2 people. And I don't know the engineering, but the 5 freeway all the way down to San Diego now is like 5 lanes on one side and 5 on the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More cars, faster, fucking dangerous. You know, I went down to San Diego on Monday on the way back. Everybody's going not like 90.
Oh, yeah.
Like fucking 90 and in and out of fucking traffic. And you said, what the fuck is this shit? But the way they've found land to go even bigger is beyond me. Bigger, but yet there's a place on the corner when we come here that's an Italian place. And I've thought about going in there to get something to eat on the way home because it's open. And said, let's see if I go in there, because it would be unusual for me to stop somewhere and eat before going home, but it's funny. I would do that, and maybe do it on a regular basis, you know, and not be so much in the box to the box and then back.
Everything sounds so beautiful and inviting to me. That's exactly where I'd like to live, with the exception of the winter. You know, I'm not a
Some people aren't. I haven't read that
book. You know, famous Mexican snow skiers. You know, Claude Gonzalez. Mexicans don't get a lot of that shit.
Cold as fuck, dude. Yeah. Especially you have a dog. The motherfucker 4:30, 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that's a bummer. But I'm telling you, and it sounds like I'm making some you know, lefty statement, but I'm not. But the winters are not nearly as harsh anymore because climate change, global warming. I mean, it just isn't. You know, it is not.
No,
you know,
it's not.
It used to be when I was younger, and you know, because I spent some time in New York when I was a kid too, and like you would have set like snow days, and now you just get a couple of. You know, you get a couple of storms every once in a while. And
Can you look up that? I think that maybe China created an artificial sun.
Ooh.
They released an artificial sun.
What are you talking about?
Damn.
You mean up somebody in the air sun? What are you talking about?
Yeah, like, oh shit, okay.
Somebody told me yesterday.
China's
they launched an artificial sun into the sky.
China's $1 trillion artificial sun fusion reactor just got 5 times hotter than the sun.
It's 5 times hotter than the sun.
Wait, but it's the reactor is on.
It looks
on
like it's
Earth?
An earthbound reactor.
So I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it either.
So how do you get near it?
But
how do you get close enough to shut it off?
It's that, you know. That assembly of pipes and fancy looking shit.
That went into the air?
I can't see that so far. I think it's just.
It just warms up the one house on the block.
They just heated the shit out of it. Yeah.
Listen, man, they're making artificial fucking suns. A $1 trillion sun. That's 5 times hotter than the sun.
How was it five times hotter than the sun? How do you even...
You know what?
That burned the shit out of his finger.
This feels like, we'd feel
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this is
who is
it
for? Like, can we not be warmed by that?
It reached 158 million degrees Fahrenheit. 158 million degrees Fahrenheit.
So, is that just for s'mores?
I mean, ultimately, the plan with the fusion reactors is for it to be like a source of energy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just very inefficient right now, even if you can make shit super hot. I'll bust through this, see if I can.
They're going through trial and error.
Too much.
All right. Unplug it. But I mean, you know, I think, you know, with global warming and everything, you know, nobody really wants to believe that this shit is happening, that we'll be gone by the time it affects us really, but it's affecting us every day. Growing up here, it rained.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in elementary school, it rained the whole month of February, mm-hmm. which it used to rain. You could tell when it was going to come and rain and stop raining. And it rained the whole month of February. And it rained, you know, you're from here. And it doesn't rain hardly anymore.
Yeah.
I can't remember that far back. You were in Vietnam. Like the rain. Yeah. Shit, I don't know. Didn't even have a rain jacket. It was just poor Mexican go out there and wonder what you had.
Yeah, I always pretend I left it at home.
My wife is from, born and raised Santa Monica, Venice, Santa Monica. And it took, I'd say 3 or 4 years for her to get comfortable with the cold. Now she's great about it. Mm-hmm. Then the other extreme is, you know, and I know so many people from Santa Monica, again, born and raised.
Right.
And their spectrum, I guess, of where they're comfortable. I just feel sorry for them because, like, anything below 60 is freezing, and anything above 80 is like, oh, it's fucking broiling.
Yeah,
and it's like growing up in Georgia and also Northeast and living in Boston, New York. Like, I'm pretty copacetic with the large swing. I just feel bad for those.
They're just spoiled from Santa Monica. That doesn't bother me at all. I like the wig.
No, they are. They are. I mean, and I lived in, when I was shooting Arrested Development, I for the first time, lived on the west side, because when I was living in L.A., I always lived on the east side. I was only in Los Feliz or Silver Lake the entire time I was here. And I don't like Santa Monica or Venice, but the weather's fucking awesome.
It's amazing.
I mean, when it's 95 degrees out here, you know, in Eagle Rock or whatever, and then you're like, it's a 75.
Almost like its own pocket, that the breeze comes in.
Yeah.
And the sun is different. I'm a member at a golf club over here, and in the summer when it gets hot, at 3 o'clock every day, there's a breeze that comes through every day at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
I don't think it's from that. But it almost like in routine. Anything after 3 o'clock, it cools down considerably. But before that, no breeze still, and then it just cools off.
I'm just fascinated with what David calls the east side. You know.
Well, yes.
Well, that east side.
That east side.
They're not going over there.
Yeah. Come to my east side of town.
No, true. Good point. Fair point.
But all of that thing has changed. Like, Venice was a bit, you know, artsy back then, you know, and the people that were out there. But, you know, with the homelessness in this area.
It's bad. Oh, my gosh.
It's like it's never been. So a proposal from someone that you know in law enforcement was to get all of the abandoned hospitals and abandoned places that they have in this, which is more than enough space to take care of the homeless situation. But because in city council, every city has its own police force, they have their own laws, it's hard to get the city of Los Angeles and all the council people to agree to say...
Right, and LA's huge.
LA's huge.
Massive.
And they won't agree to allow them...
The problem isn't just, you know, homelessness per se, it's mental illness.
There's
a lot of... And my wife had a place, you know, was there on 4th and Rose. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was, you couldn't escape, it was everywhere. And it wasn't just, oh, these people are down in luck. These people are severely mentally ill, and they need help you know, and it's not just about, you know, oh, let's, you know, let's, we'll put them in this, we'll put them in this right. place. We'll turn this into a, you know, but these, they need more than walls and a ceiling. I mean,
So if we're if it's that way, so compartmentalized by cities and by districts and thing that they will never agree to. I mean, just in itself, the Los Angeles, the general hospital sits empty, and that thing is massive.
Yeah,
you know, massive.
But you're right; it should be used.
It should be used.
You know,
all those things that are gone, but also that I've lived here my whole life, and I've never seen homeless people be violent to people on the street, and in the last 2 years, I've seen it a lot.
It's ugly,
and it's not. And you know, just out of nowhere, a guy with a pipe and the kids and the mom they're waiting for the bus, and that should be enough to be able to throw the red flag up to say
that's happening in New York too. Yeah. Where New York, I think it still remains this way, but I think it's creeping the other way. But it was the safest big city in America, but in the last year or so, I mean, there have been a lot of this, you know, this pushing people in front of this up shit from the 70s.
Man. Oh, yes. Oh,
you know, that's like 70s shit. Mm-hmm. And
pushing people in front of the subway.
And it's meant, they're mentally ill. These people are mentally ill. They're not like homicidal by nature, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, things are. It's
tragic.
Yeah.
Tragic.
Do you consider yourself, you know, Arrested Development? Amazing. Troy Miller, everybody there.
Yeah.
You know, when a show, that's a show that needed to continue when a lot of shows that
we got canceled.
Yeah, I know.
My daughter's number one show.
Incredible. What was that? I mean, you had some amazing cast.
It was just such a treat, and as you said, the cast was just...
Was there an improv side of it, or was it pretty much what was written?
It was almost all of what was written, and we used to say, because people would ask us that a lot, and honestly, outside of the pilot and maybe the first half of the first season, you know, a couple times you'd riff something, just because it's just by nature, mm-hmm. especially when you're on your fourth take or fifth take or whatever. And but the scripts were so dense and then were cut down that it feels like it's improvised. That's a testament to how strong the writing was.
Yeah.
You know, and it really wasn't. You know, there were a handful of things here and there, but not as many as people think.
It's maybe one of the most underrated shows, and when people talk about the best shows on TV, and you know, as time goes, you know, other shows come that may not be as good. But, you know, it's like a pecking order. But that Arrested Development was incredible.
Oh, yeah. Especially that original run is like that's on the Mount Rushmore.
Those
comedy.
First three seasons were – and we knew it was special, too. In fact, I was initially – they wanted me to look at Buster and Job, and I did not have a handle on Job at all. And I just moved to New York. And I after being in LA for nine years of going like I got to get the fuck out of here, and finally found an opportunity, and then I was having the time of my life, and
book a trip, book a job, right?
And then I get the script, and like I wasn't that interested, but and they said just read it, and I did not connect with Job at all. I had no handle on that, but. When I was reading Tobias, I was like, oh, I knew instantly who that guy was. I was like, I know. And I was really attracted to it because it was like, ooh, part-time. I can just come in and out. I don't have to move back to L.A. and do like six episodes. Ah, it was great. And then came out to shoot the pilot. And I remember this. I'll never forget it. It was at the Beverly Connection, which is across from Beverly Center. And there was a place called Soup Plantation.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They had the
walkway in the back, and I was and I called my girlfriend in New York, and I said to her, "Listen, this show is going to be very good. It's very special, and I think I need to do this on a regular basis." And you know, we kind of were in a newer relationship, and she didn't, you know, get in, you know. sign up for having to move to LA or not, or having a boyfriend that wasn't going to be there for 5 months a year. So, but I was like, this is, it's too good. I got a really strong, this is just shooting the pilot.
I don't think that there would have been a thing that would have stopped you creatively. I think creatively you felt like this is something that I should do. You talked to your girlfriend and said, I like this. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people make decisions where a woman is involved and they may not do it because of that person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I was telling her, I wasn't asking her. You know? But I mean, that's how strong, I mean, it was and I fought it tooth and nail. I did not want to go back to LA. I had only been in New York at that point for what, a year mm-hmm. and change, and maybe whatever it was, 2 years. And again, I was having so much fun and so much pussy, George. Just ridiculous. Just ridiculous. I mean, anyway.
No, I mean.
And I was like, I just knew. We knew from shooting.
It's all different, too. It's not the same. Even though it looks the same, it's all different.
Are you talking about the pussy?
It comes in the same container, but it's just all very different.
One of a kind.
God bless you guys.
It's not one of a kind. It's kind of
a one.
Kind of a one.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great cast.
Did you have your furrowed in or?
No. I started thinning out when I was like 19.
Oh!
Yeah, about 19. And I still had, I had like kind of, I just let my hair grow, especially like out of high school and becoming, you know, your own person, independent individual. And I grew my hair out and I was high all the time. And I had my horn-rimmed glasses with tape on them because I couldn't afford to fix them. But it started thinning out, and I was like this kind of bald by the time I was, I mean, really when I was doing Mr. Show, you know,
yeah,
it was, and that was, I mean, I was 30, so I was bald by 27, I'd say. It went pretty quickly, maybe even earlier, who knows.
Would you have preferred to have kept it, or is it, I mean, you know?
No, well.
Or did it not matter?
It didn't matter. I don't know if you recall the last, what we were just talking about, but it didn't matter. And then I can wear wigs easily and like really change up my, especially for something like Mr. Show, where you're doing all these characters and bits and stuff.
Sure.
And I could, awesome show too. You know, I come out and I'm bald, and then you throw on a wig and take the glasses off, and I'm like a totally different guy, you know, which is helpful if you're doing that kind of thing.
Mr. Show was a great show too.
Oh, also on the sketch Mount Rushmore.
I'm in two of them.
And, I believe that you and I have something in common. I believe we both lost to Weird Al for a Grammy. I never lost to a fucking comedian.
Well, I say that in
the
special.
That motherfucker wins the whole. I get nominated the Grammys. I'm in Pebble Beach. I make the cut. They're like, "Are you gonna go to the Grammys?" I said, "I don't know." I mean, then somebody gets on the phone. Listen, man, Weird Al wins every time. He's won 6 already. If you're in the lead or near the lead, just stay over there. We'll let you know. Fucking call never came.
Listen. I don't know if you know Al. He's the nicest,
the
sweetest guy. I love him.
What does his mantle look like?
Yeah,
fucking,
well,
12 fucking Grammys up there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, I think it's a different, it's almost, I mean, I just feel like it's not, it's a different category, I feel like. Doing stand-up comedy is different.
But it goes into, I lost to Colbert, who did a special on Comedy Central, which is different. That's almost like a variety. Mm-hmm. And then I lost to Flight of the Conchords, and that was music and comedy, but never lost to a comedian.
Right, right.
I lost to people that were other,
well,
but
that,
it
should
be.
That's what I'm saying.
Be.
I wish it was its own category, because it's a different thing. And they're all deserving of of notice. And, you know, everything we've mentioned, they're all deserving, but it is different to write a 60-minute monologue that has such a different craft and different skill set to it than to do, you know, to write song parodies or to do a variety show. Or I mean,
that could be edited down to half an hour. It's a half hour Christmas special that was edited down. But I agree. I agree with you completely.
Well, there's a while we're talking about this, one thing that always bothered me was when Mr. Show got nominated for a handful of Emmys, and the year that we did, like, I think it was season 3 or 4 was like kind of our big year, and I think we got nominated for three Emmys, and there was comedy, the best performance, comic performance by a male or whatever. And in the show that we submitted, it was the one that had a sketch called Prenatal Pageants, which I think is some of it's one of Bob Odenkirk's best performances. And you can see how he's would become the great dramatic actor he's become. And it's just a really, it's a funny sketch and it's a funny idea, but he's fucking great in it. It's real, it's grounded, and there's pathos to it. And he just does all this stuff with his character in this 5-minute sketch. And the award for best comic performance went to Dennis Miller, who had a talk show, and you know, there was like a monologue in the beginning, and then there was like a sit down and you talk to people, and then there was like it was like photo funnies or something like that. And that, like, you're gonna tell me that performance was better than what Bob did in the entire episode where he did all these different things, and he wasn't recognized at all. It's always been like a and this isn't necessarily a knock against Dennis Miller per se. It's the thing. It's the thing that you're doing is that's not even close to what Bob
did. It's not. I think has it changed in the last few years where it's more spoken word?
Let me see what
I don't know.
But then you shouldn't be. I mean, I don't know what spoken word entitles it, but it should be for stand up comedy.
Yeah, we're talking about two different things. We're talking about Emmys versus Grammys. Overall, but I think for both of them, Emmys, need to be. There needs to be a distinction,
right?
Because, as you well know, I mean, putting together from scratch a 60-minute set, going out there, refining it, sequencing it, editing it, how do you perform it, is vastly different than those other things.
Right,
and it's harder.
True,
it's
harder. Yeah,
I think it's harder.
You're sitting at a desk. You're going through the news. And then you're creating a character with the story and the writing and, you know, two great seasons. And HBO at that time, powerhouse. HBO.
Comedy, especially.
Comedy.
Yep.
But yeah, it looks like now broken up into a couple categories. They just disappeared.
Well, you're an Emmy. You won an Emmy for?
Ben Stiller Show. Yeah, writing. And we won an Emmy for... I thought we won for music on Mr. Show. I'm not sure. I know we were nominated for we had a year where we were nominated for like 3 Emmys, but I don't remember.
Well, it's good to see you, man. You've done incredible work.
Well, thanks.
And thanks for coming to visit us.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was an eye-opener for me.
Yeah. All right.
I'm ready to move to New York.
Okay. Well, wait till March. Yeah. Yeah, and well, thank you very much.
I don't, Dave.
Yeah. All right, and this will be on probably a week and a half if you want to tell people, again, just where to check it out.
Oh, yes. The special is called I'm From David Cross, I'm From the Future, and you can get it at my website, officialdavidcross.com. It'll be available on February 12th is the live stream premiere thing, but you can get it, and then you can have it and do with it what you will.
Great. Got it.
Check it out. Awesome.
All right, man.
Good to go.